advertising these days, it's really based on a good strategy. Successful campaign is, and how that lives in the creative, how that shows up in the funnels, the content marketing.
What's better than earning money from a 9-to-5 job? It's earning money while you sleep, which is made possible if you start investing. You're listening to the Real Estate Investing Demystified with your very own dynamic duo, Ava Benesaki and August Biniez. Tune in as we discuss everything real estate, both on the passive and active sides. We feature life-changing stories of today's real estate leaders that will help build your own roadmap to success. This is a show that will lead you to diversified portfolio, a much bigger revenue, and a next level venture that brings you a smooth cash flow. Let's get this episode started. Welcome to Real Estate Investing Demystified. We're back at it today.
We're back
Thursday,
at it.
March 19th. We're going to be talking about something that's super exciting.
Yeah, excited to be here. You know, as we sit here in beautiful Naples, Florida, and our guest is joining, we'll find out where he's joining in from. But there's a war happening on the other side of the world. Trump and his administration have learned from Putin, and they're not calling it a war. They're calling it a special operation. But people in Iran are getting bombed. That's where I'm originally from. So it's very interesting. People are asking me about the situation and what's happening in Iran. Obviously, my family left Iran a long time ago after the revolution. So when the Islamic Republic was in power, and Iran became from a secular constitutional monarchy to a theocracy and kleptocracy, which is a very interesting kind of dictatorship to be living in. And I lived there for a few years before we made the move to Canada when I was a teenager. But people ask about how do you feel about Iran getting bombed as you're here and from all sides, right, left. Mm-hmm. And my response is, imagine having cancer. And the IRGC and the Islamic Republic is the cancer of Iran. And the US and Israel bombing Iran feels like chemotherapy. You know, it's killing you while you're dying in the hopes of getting rid of the initial cancer. So that's how I feel. But hopefully, fingers crossed, some family we have left over in Iran have made the move to northern Iran by the Caspian Sea, which is usually insulated from the war. And that's what we did when Iran was being bombed by Iraqi planes in the 80s. But yeah, we should be glad and excited that we're here having a podcast, enjoying the sun and living life while, unfortunately, you know, American troops are putting their lives at risk. Yeah. And the Arab Gulf nations are getting rockets coming in from Iran as well. And oil prices are above $110 a barrel. So very interesting. It has an effect on commercial real estate where we are. But today's discussion is going to be a bit different.
Yeah. To your point, though, it just makes you feel gratitude every morning. And that's why we kind of join hands as a family every morning and say, wow, we are so grateful for where we're at today. And just prayers going out to everybody.
Absolutely. All right, great. So we have a great show for you guys today, and we're excited about it. In preparation for the show, Ava and I were pretty excited to have our guest on and discuss different strategies for marketing, because marketing for a real estate private equity firm, it's not same as marketing to sell a product or a service. You're offering a partnership. So, mm-hmm. And minimum investments are usually pretty high. The type of investors who invest in these private offerings are pretty sophisticated. They have to be accredited when it comes to SEC regulations. So there's a lot of different stuff out there. Basically, you're competing with Wall Street, the richest of the firms in the world. So maybe we can tell our audience a bit about our guests and we can start the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to just talk about marketing really plays a big part in capital raising, because capital raising, I mean, it's all about relationships, and you can tap into your current database as much as you can. But when you start marketing, that's when investors really start coming through your funnel. So we're excited to dive into all of this today and talk about how these two intertwine. But today we're joined by Jason Fishman. Now, Jason Fishman, he is the CEO of Digital Niche Agency and a digital marketing expert with over 15 years of experience scaling growth campaigns. He's worked with more than 850 brands and has helped raise over $100 million through 500 plus equity crowdfunding campaigns. Jason specializes in building measurable marketing systems across search, social, email, and content. And he also hosts the Test Optimize Scale podcast, where he's interviewed over 200 founders and marketers. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ava. Really appreciate that introduction.
Incredible. Yeah, we wanted to kind of dive into things. August, why don't you start out by talking about how the show is going to go here?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm talking about marketing, when we started, I think a great start to this is CPI as an investment firm. When we started, we had no idea about marketing. Ava and I and other partners had no background in marketing. We just knew that we had a business idea, and our idea was really allowing Canadian investors to have exposure to U.S. commercial real estate, particularly multifamily, which was at that time had done tremendously well. Over the past 20 years, from 2019, the past 20 years before 2019, U.S. multifamily had beaten the S&P 500, so it had beaten the index funds, and was a great asset class. Now, Canadians couldn't have exposure to U.S. multifamily through the syndication model. So when we started CPI, that was really the mandate and the goal. Soon after, we realized that firms that opened the door for U.S. investors had done tremendously better, Canadian firms. So we're like, hey, you know, we need to be available to U.S. investors and Canadian investors. But initially, kind of early on, we try to gain as much knowledge as we can through who are we going to go to invest with us? Initially, our circle of influence. People who had partnered with me, invested with me as a builder, as a developer, Ava as a real estate agent, top ranking real estate agent, the database that she had. So people that knew, like, and trusted us. But we knew that at some point we were going to squeeze the juice out of the database and we needed to bring in more leads. So we got a CRM. We started adding people to that CRM. And soon after, we heard that if you have a CRM and you have a 1,000 investors, you can raise hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm like, well, we got over 1,000 investors. We should be easy. And then we heard a story about this. There's a chiropractor who got involved in real estate investments, and he was able to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, like just absolutely mind blowing. So we're like, what is the secret sauce? What is he doing? So I was investigating that farther and farther. And I realized that this chiropractor was spending $100,000 a month
A month,
on
yeah.
paid ads. And he was able to raise a lot of money. So, yeah, I mean, that was our experience when it came to marketing. Then soon we realized we had to build a brand around ourselves, the company CPI. We learned about funnels and lead gen, paid ads, other aspects of it. So it was a whirlwind of learning for us when he started CPI. But we're still learning today because it's a very fluid market when it comes to marketing. So, yeah, maybe I can stop there and see if you have any comments about that.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating space. And that's why I got involved and back in 2015 in Reg D campaigns. My background is in advertising. So I was brought to these initiatives to leverage third-party audience data, allowing us to filter by household income and net worth. Like you said earlier, bringing accredited investors into these deals, you're able to solicit, you have to be very specific on who you go after. Great to hear that you had this strong understanding of who your audience was. Hey, we want to bring a Canadian investors in. Imagine there's 10, 30 other different targeting filters you could apply to that. And the great thing about advertising, why I love it so much, and I think you're asking earlier too, does it still work? What's going on with it? You're buying media, you're buying traffic, you're buying visits of your offering page. Many offering pages are, pitch decks, vertical at that, and layered with social proof, more reflecting website lead generation best practices. And we're measuring click-through rate, we're measuring conversion rate of each stage. So we could be buying traffic, look at how they're converting through each stage of the funnel with setting up a call, perhaps with you, your team. Some of our clients will use investor relations partners, looking at the closing rate of those calls. So you can measure a cost per lead and then a cost per acquisition of each investment, looking at the average transactional value and that cost, you get a return on ad spend metric. And if that is favorable enough, clients typically ask us, how much of this can we buy? Your example there of that $100,000 a month, I could tell you many issuers, many funds will start at, 5K, 15K a month in advertising spends. But then as they're seeing results, as they're testing and optimizing towards what's working best, they scale to these higher and higher and higher levels. No one wants the expense. No one wants to spend on the ads. They're buying those results. So to have 100K in monthly, 100 million more coming out the other end for the year, great return. And that's what you're managing with these traffic algorithms.
Is it fair to say that Facebook and Instagram ads, paid ads essentially, they're still the number one way to gain leads today?
It's a hard question to answer because you're looking at what you're comparing it to. I would say referrals are the strongest, peer-to-peer marketing, actually, even above that. There's generally limitations. So this is to be stacked on top of that foundation. You had mentioned we're bringing our first degree network in, friends, family, email subscribers, social media followers, obviously followers of the podcast and all your different media platforms. You bring that in first. You're hoping to see some social sharing, some peer-to-peer marketing from there. And then additional referrals. If you're getting people to introduce prospects, I would put that higher in the totem pole. That being said, it's hard to scale that. That advertising piece, how you're able to buy more and ramp it up, allows for a different type of intentionality towards your goals and the actions you take around it. As far as advertising, allowing for that, but then selecting Meta, Facebook, and Instagram as the top channel, it's a fundamental channel. Some people have generalizations about who you're reaching on Facebook, on Instagram. There's over 1 billion daily active users there. You could reach anybody, whether it's at a family office or someone while you're reaching out for institutional capital at any of these organizations, whether it's an accredited investor in a very specific area, you can find anyone on there. You could upload email lists, run advertising directly to the individuals on that list. The click-through rate and conversion rate I find to be favorable on Meta. It's a high impact placement, often in between people's family and friends and the influencers and thought leaders they follow, in between those posts. It could be mistaken for organic content at that. And there's a call to action button, a click-through rate button that you'd measure the click-through rate from. So I typically find higher conversions and click-through rates there. But it is diversification. As you get to higher spends, let's say 5,000 a day, 150K a month, the results can often plateau. Another place clients can see very strong performance is investor email newsletters. Best ones, investors are actually paying to receive the content, and the publishers are selecting deals organically. There are many other newsletters where you can buy placements in front of an audience that's just receiving for free. You're paying a sponsorship fee on top of that. You can measure cost per click. You can measure the conversion rate and the cost per acquisition of each investor from there. And if it's
Is
showing
that more
strong
of a
return, buy more
affiliate?
and more of it.
Is that more of an affiliate marketing if you're piggybacking off somebody else's newsletter to market your deals or your firm?
Well, broker dealers are allowed to take a success fee. Affiliates, unless they're a broker dealer, shouldn't actually be charging a success fee on the closed investment. There are different perspectives towards it, but they can towards a lead. I've seen affiliates offer their promotions and getting paid per lead or per
No, aside from
start
the
of
compliance
the
side,
investment process.
aside from the compliance side, I was more talking about like marketing lingo. When you're using somebody else's database to market any product that you have, is that considered affiliate marketing or has a different name to it?
It could be. I would look at it as advertising. And some of these are larger publishers. You can do this through Robinhood Snacks. You could do it through 1440, Morning Brew. There's many of these, larger publishers that offer these paid email placements.
Got it. Got it. And just going back to your services and your firm services, you are not, by the way, you're talking about it, you don't seem to be just a paid ads focused firm. You're more holistic, more involved when you come in and offer your services to firms.
Yeah. Paid advertising these days, it's really based on a good strategy. A successful campaign is, and how that lives in the creative, how that shows up in the funnels, the content marketing. It's typically seven touch points or more before an investor converts, even on a lead form. So we need to be focused on what they're seeing, headline worthy announcements on a weekly basis at that, and how that's populated across social media, across email drips, across long form content, often including webinars, articles, videos, press placements, podcast appearances, conference appearances, and as much social proof and third party validation through that as possible. People don't believe what they see online. So the more you're able to point to these validators, the better. All of that feeds into a strong performing advertising campaign today. So we like to start at the strategy stage. It's a model I've built called the 8-point plan. You're building out the roadmap from there, and based on what competitors are doing, the audiences you're targeting, the channels and the creative and the partners and the projections that you're playing for all the way through. And then that activates across those content funnels, the ads and outreach campaigns. So even if we're just working on ads for a client, if they say, hey, we have these other pieces, we're still going to advise on them as part of an advertising push because we know that'll show up in the conversion rate and return on ad spend metrics we're measured by at the end of the day.
Got it. Going back, sorry, I think I've taken over the podcast now and you haven't got a chance to ask any
No,
questions,
I
but
just wanted to ask one more thing on paid ads before you go to the next. Do you have more?
I was actually going to go take a step back. So maybe we can come back to paid
Let's
ads.
do that.
Jason, I want to talk to you about a couple of exercises. One
Sure.
exercise, for example, August and Ava, executives with CPI Capital, came to you for our marketing needs. It's a unique marketing need. We're an investment firm. We're looking for investors. So there is compliance layers to overcome. There is a minimum investment of, $50,000, $100,000 in most cases. That's a big ticket item. There is a trust basis there. So there's a lot of different layers which you have expertise in. But August and Ava come to you, and August and Ava just have a simple website. They don't have a podcast. They've never been on anybody else's podcast. They don't have a blog. They don't really have social proof. They've done it maybe a deal here or there. What is the first thing that you do for a firm, for a boutique startup firm that doesn't really have a huge track record, doesn't have a marketing presence? What is the first thing you do? I'm guessing it's not going to be like, hey, let's spend 20 grand on paid ads, but it might be a month on paid ads, but it might be. But just a high level, what would you do for that firm? What is the initial advice?
Sure. I'd go back to that strategy. You fail to plan, you plan to fail. We have these groups that come to us and think, I don't know if this is going to work, but we'll spend a few thousand dollars on ads. Go do your thing. We're counting on you. And it's really the wrong approach. And we tell them this, of course, as well. You want to be asking yourself the right questions during that planning process. So that 8-point plan model, I'd want to walk through that. I'd ask a lot of questions about your industry and look to pull different stats. Even what you've shared so far, outpacing S&P, being able to talk about the deals in Canada versus the deals here. I would look for these different points that we're going to be able to speak to later in the creative, but also to bring us up to speed,
You leverage the
on the
competitive
strategy.
advantages that this firm might
Oh,
have.
absolutely. Ask as many questions as we can to get a top 10 reasons to invest. We'll hear it from you. We'll also be pulling those type of highlights from any materials that you have. So if there's already, a pitch deck or any type of offering page, we want to pull from that as well. I mentioned competitors a bit earlier, but competitor marketing audit to me is one of the most important parts of the planning process because that shows me what the prospective investor audience is going to see, what's going to be coming across their desk. And I want to understand what that conversation is right now. Success leaves clues at that, but I want to know how much traffic they're getting to their site and offering pages. I want to know what they're posting on social media, including LinkedIn. I want to know what ads they're running on social media. Get a Facebook ads library, see this. I want to know what ads they're running on Google and similar platforms and what they're ranking for organically, which publishers are talking about them, what events they're speaking at. Who's speaking about them on social media, what they're sending out in their email
But
newsletter.
what
I
if for
mentioned
this
how important email
exercise,
newsletters are.
what if they're not doing a lot of that stuff? What if they're just newcomers? They've done it one or two deals. They have a website. They haven't done. What is the first thing you want them to spend their money on?
Sure. But I'm doing that for the competitors,
Competitors.
people competing after the same audience. I would
Competitors
say
are doing.
spending on this strategy, on this process, because they really need to get a sense of that. There could be misconceptions on, hey, this is what investors want to see. When I show the actuals and the groups that are moving the most, advertising the most in the Reg D space and for their vertical, it's typically pretty eye-opening.
Okay. So he takes a look at the
And then we
competitors,
use,
and then he go ahead.
yeah. And then we use that to formulate the
Right.
campaign from there. So the
And
audience
historically, what has
variance, it's
been?
the channels, the
What
creative.
historically, when you've done this for newer firms, you realize they don't have a lot of social proof, a lot of they're not really out there on social media. What is the first, when you craft their strategy, where is it mainly being spent on? Where is the budget being spent on paid ads, on blogs? Is it on updating their website, creating lead magnets, creating media kits for them to get them on podcast, for them to start their own podcast? Where do you put your attention?
Well, after we look at the competitors and the audiences, we get a good idea on what channels we want to focus on from there. But in any case, I'd want to make sure there's a good content marketing funnel in place so that we're getting a higher conversion rate. So those funnels, where's the landing page? What does the email drip look like from there? What are the emails pointing to? Are there different long-form content pieces that we're going to be able to get them excited about? That is going to be imperative to get a higher closing rate. From there, I like to begin on Meta for market testing. Why? I can A/B test the different audiences at a low daily spend level, meanwhile, get enough of a sample size to see which audiences and which creatives are performing best. I have my email list. I have partners to get far more in terms of a credit investor email list, and very specific down to the zip code level that I can upload and target with advertising, but then let the data show me what's working best. So beyond my assumptions for the audience, hey, I think audience B, Canadians living in this market, working in this field, I'm able to see from the results what's producing the best cost per lead for me, and hopefully the best closing rates, best acquisition cost. I would then look to scale up those advertising channels and begin to explore some of the advertising channels that the competitors are using further from there.
That's awesome, Jason. Yeah, just for people that are listening, when he's talking about testing, when you go do some ads, you actually have to make what it, and you can tell me some metrics that you guys use. But for example, if your ad campaign is you have 5 grand to spend, you might make three different videos that are saying something different but slightly the same, and then you pour that out. You see which video is getting the most clicks, right? And then
Qualified clicks. You
qualified
don't want to just
clicks.
give
That's right.
clicks,
So
right?
it's important to hire a consultant like Jason because it does get very convoluted, I would say. It's pretty difficult. But if you could talk a little bit about testing and for example,
Of course.
how many videos do you test? Does it all depend on how much money you're spending on a monthly basis? And how does that all work?
The money that you're spending on a monthly basis matters because it's how you project your results. It's also how you determine what's going to be too narrow of an audience size, how many creatives you need to build. If you're only running, let's say, 3K a month, $100 a day, if you're running five audiences, we generally begin somewhere between 4 and 10 audiences. If you're running five, that's only $20 a day. If you're getting a dollar, $2 per click off of that, which based on the CPMs, the cost per thousand impressions you're bidding on, it may be $1 to $2 per click, based on a decent click-through rate. So that may only be 10, 20 clicks per day. That's really thin. Anything below, 100 visits, 100 clicks, you're kind of shooting in the dark, and it's difficult to shut things off too early. You could be missing the performance. So you don't want to run too many at too small of a budget, but generally 4 to 10 audiences to begin. And then I would say 4 to 8 creatives to begin. Again, you really want to assess what's occurring, the performance for each of those before you shut them off, or even before you start creating new ones to add to that. Based on how much you're spending, how fast you're able to get to those benchmarks and get a better glimpse into how that audience is responding, every 1 to 2 weeks from there, we'll add another 4 to 8 creatives. Again, based on timeline and spend. You almost manage it like a social media organic profile these days, where you want to have something new that you're showing those investors each week. This could be an investor testimonial. This could be how many more investors you've added, how much capital has been there. This could be talking about some type of investor webinar or in-person presentation. Ads could be used to geotarget people to get there. So there's so many different things to structure. I think the competitor audits show these. I've worked on so many of them. And if I could add one more thing about the testing, the results, what you're playing for, I would generally be shooting for about a $50 cost per lead. I'm happy paying 100. I'm happy paying 300 if I know it's closing at a higher level. The significance is if 1 out of 50 of those leads are closing and you're hitting a $2,500 acquisition cost, 500 to 5,000 on a Reg D is generally looked at as a gold benchmark. And if your average investment is in the six-figure level, even if it's at 100K, if you're in that 20, 40x type return level, that's generally looked at as a good cost of capital. I have campaigns running underneath $1,000 cost per acquisition on Reg D campaigns. You're not limited to that. This is an effective metric. I'm using round numbers. It would come down to the penny and how much you're spending on ads and what it averages out to. But that's what's available when you're seeing good performance on ads and a strong closing process offline.
Amazing. Yeah, I was going to say, can you you're obviously your whole business is KPIs and what works best and everything like
Oh,
that. So
yeah.
when you I think I heard you talking about some numbers on a different podcast when I was listening to you, but put it into perspective for us. If we had 1,000 people come through our funnel that were off of paid ads, what's the conversion rate for those leads? Like, what have you typically seen, right?
Well, offline, there's variables. So
Yeah.
every company closes at a different level.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're speaking to the CEO, the founder, if they're speaking to somebody mid-level, lower, you know, someone's processing the lead first and the prospect then gets discouraged. If they're speaking to an investor relations partner, if they're speaking to, believe it or not, an AI investor relations partner, you're anticipating different levels of closing. And even just the founder, I've worked on over 500 deals. Some founders are stronger than others at closing investors offline. Some of them, the first call, it happens and at higher levels. Others, they talk to a lot of folks and it's not moving forward. So it's a big variable. I used that number, 1 out of 50 of the leads closing, accounting for some no-shows, accounting for investors who don't pass through the KYC, the know your client process, ensuring that they're accredited. Not everyone who thinks that they're an accredited investor, really is. The way it works with W-2 and net worth outside of primary home and their businesses and other things that can convolute things. Some investors won't pass through the KYC historically.
So 2%. So 1,000
Yeah.
people, you get close 20. 20 at 100K, that's $2 million.
That would
There you
be
go.
looked at as a good level of performance. I've seen much higher closing rates. I've
Fair enough.
seen much higher average investment levels, of course. If you're at a 25 to 50K minimum investment, you're probably looking at around 125, 150K as an average investment. If you're at 100K as your minimum investment on your Form D 506C filing, you're probably thinking 260, 280 as an average investment. And I would be playing for these same benchmarks, even at those higher transaction averages.
Okay. Yeah. Going back to
Nice.
the exercise that I was talking about as far as a newer
Yeah.
firm, I didn't get a concrete answer back from you, but it's fair enough. Newer firms usually don't have different divisions within their company. They're pretty mom and pop, started out. So the executives are wearing many different hats. So they don't really have appointment setters, closers, the executive team getting on calls. It's usually them being on a lot of these calls. But when you have this many leads coming in, there is a need for qualifiers and appointment setters and people figuring out if these people are qualified. And then you discussed this a bit as well, that sometimes you also provide those services to newer firms where you might provide them with some investor relations team members or what have you. Talk to us about that aspect when it comes to newer firms who don't have investor relation team members, and maybe the founders themselves are not very, they've never really been on investor calls, or they don't know how investor calls go. Like, what do you do in that situation?
Sure. Answering the question, content marketing activate or strategy activating across content marketing ads and outreach that will produce the leads. We can work with their team to train them in terms of what is most engaging to prospective investor audiences for their webinars, for their advertising, for their articles. Investor relations, we actually aren't equipped to manage internally. I do work with IR firms. And they're able to bring in IR agents. They have a whole call center, so volume's not an issue. Some of those groups even offer AI solutions at this point. Some of our clients hire for those individuals internally over time as their campaigns are successful. But with the coaching we provide for the webinar, for the advertisements, for the content, I would say a lot of that translates directly to the investor relations calls. And I find there is some type of sales background with most of the founders that we work with, especially in real estate. So it would just be filling in some of those gaps.
Got it.
Nice.
All right, let's do the second exercise. August and Ava come see you. They've been in business for 6 years. They have used paid ads in some level in the past, nothing crazy. Maybe they had a couple of live deals, so they spent some money while they had a live deal for paid ads. They have their own podcast, they have their own blog. They're getting 300 to 500 website visits on a weekly or monthly basis. I got to get those stats. If you research their name or their company name, it comes up. If you ask ChatGPT AI about Canadian firm that helps Canadians invest across borders, their firm name comes up. So social proof exists,
Excellent.
track record exists. They have the infrastructure internally when it comes to closers and appointment setters and qualifiers. They never really use AI. So the brand is pretty built, but now they want to increase the number of leads, increase the database. They have a weekly email with 10,000 people getting their email on a weekly basis, 30% to 35% open rate, over 200 live and current investors. What is your strategy for a firm like that? Is it to go, let me ask you in this way, so your answer is not more broad. Is your attention and focus going more trying to find current sleeping giants within their leads, maybe investors who haven't invested yet because they have such a large current database? Or is your attention and focus is going to bring in more leads? Or is it both at the same time? Like, what do you do when you come into a firm like that? Or maybe something completely out of that.
I'd be very interested in audience development of the podcast, of the blog, of the email, and looking to use that as an opportunity to engage those audiences versus just take them to a lead generation form, which we would do with a newer firm. I think that's a massive value point, and you're going to have a warmer dynamic, a warmer conversation by first taking audiences through that funnel and then strengthening the mid-funnel messaging and looking to take them, down a path to speak with you guys about investment directly and looking to have increases to the conversion rate there. Conversion rate optimizations and ongoing task. It sounds like there's an indication to me that there's a lot more people in the audience that haven't converted yet. So doing different A/B test variants to see how we can get better performance there while continuing to grow the audience, but from the upper part of that funnel with your media platforms.
So focusing on the current database and trying to get them, come up with strategies to get them on calls with our team members. That would be one. And then would you layer in a new kind of leads coming in as well? Or no, you actually said you
He
would,
would. He
yeah,
would.
you would.
Yeah.
Would you also audit our current strategies to see how we can, let's say, increase our audience on our podcasts and YouTube shows, maybe host more webinars. We've been hosting a lot of webinars, but they're just more educational webinars trying to convert our social media leads into our actual email leads because people who get our emails, those are the ones who are going to get our live deals when a deal comes in. And those are people who are added to our, if we have over 20,000 followers on LinkedIn, but my investor relations team is never going to reach out to them. My investor relations team is going to reach out to people who've subscribed to our emails and are getting our emails regularly and they're opening it regularly. They're much higher on their list to reach out to than somebody who is just my follower on LinkedIn. So I guess you would come in and possibly do an audit, seeing how you can take my LinkedIn leads, for example, and make them into a subscriber for our email kind of ideas.
Exactly. And we'd have to, when strengthening the funnel, look at past performance. What emails have got the highest click-through rate, the highest reply rate, which posts have produced that type of engagement, so we could strengthen it. It wouldn't just be adding blindly as much as really doing a deep, thorough analysis of what's occurred to date across those databases while growing it and growing it and growing it from there. Probably a centralized location around email. And like you said, taking the social audiences there. So from LinkedIn and these other places. You mentioned the webinars as well too. Just to give a more concrete example around audience building, your next webinar, if you're running advertising to a lead form that signs up the audience on Zoom webinar or similar platform, you could even set up Facebook Instant Forms for this and probably get under a $5 cost per sign up of a new attendee. Meanwhile, you're getting their email address, adding them to your email database accordingly, checking the right boxes, everything, of course. But you can get a lower cost email sign up than through the normal lead generation submission funnels. You can build a larger digital audience there. Maybe only a third of the signups show up, but if you're seeing good performance and keep ramping up the ad budget over time, you could have thousands of signups. You could have, 1,000 plus people in the room digitally, and then everybody gets added to the email address, the email database afterwards, with that stronger funnel that we're then running, so that you're seeing more calls, more actual leads after they've been nurtured.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, everything that we do is for when we have that live deal and we go for a capital raise. Like that's the whole point of putting all this work in. I mean, we have a buddy who has one German investor. So he doesn't do anything on the marketing side, and we literally spend our days on podcasts
work
and
with retail
marketing.
mainly,
We work with retail.
but focusing on retail has resulted in us getting institutional investors as well, because somehow or other they ended up in our database and they reached out like, hey, we've been looking for a group like you guys. We got a couple $1 million we want to invest. So that has happened, but it's very sporadic. We never even tried for it.
Yeah, but everything really goes back to when we have that live deal. And for example, I can give you a quick rundown at CPI Capital. When we have a live deal, we keep things pretty simple, I would say. And we've done this time and time again, but we send out an initial deal email. Then we send out about eight follow-up emails after that. We host a live webinar. Then we send out the webinar replay. We're posting on our socials every single day. And we do some paid ads on LinkedIn and
I know
Instagram.
not nothing like the face.
Sorry, Facebook. We do some paid ads on Facebook and Instagram. We're still, the big question mark is, does LinkedIn ads work? But we oversubscribe on our deals, which is incredible. So if we were to come to you,
Yeah.
Jason, it would be like, we're in 2026 now. It looks like it's going to be a great year for deal flow. We want to make sure that we can 10x our strategy even more to be able to continue to oversubscribe on deals. Because eventually, depending on the timing for an investor, you tap out of your current investor network. But that's really what we do. And I feel like with your brain power, with AI coming out there, you can probably 10x our strategy and make it much more effective moving forward. Because again, we do keep it pretty simple. I mean, we don't do anything too crazy, right? But we've really nurtured our database over the last 6 years too, a lot,
Yeah,
built a lot of
that
traffic.
wasn't simple. Building
That was not
the
simple.
database, nurturing that database, all those calls we've had, all those relationships we've built, all those dinners we had with investors,
That's right.
all of
Oh,
that
yeah.
work that we did, that wasn't simple. When we have a live deal,
We keep
that
it
sounds
pretty. It
simple,
sounds simple,
but
but it took a lot of learning. Yeah. Like Jason, I've probably been on like 1500 calls by now, right? Like it's just insane. And that takes a lot of time. And yeah, traveling all over Canada and the US to, host certain events and everything. So yeah, I guess it's not as simple when you put it that way.
Yeah, simple stuff. Let us, before we get to the next segment of the show, let us ask you
Sure.
another. This is kind of a, it has some proprietary effects to it, but is there something else you wanted to cover before our last question, before the next segment? Was there something else you wanted to cover?
Do LinkedIn ads work? They're so expensive, and we're wondering, do you use that strategy a lot? That was one of my big questions for him today, because we've always been asking ourselves, should we spend money on LinkedIn? Should we not? Should we just keep it to Facebook and Instagram because it does work? Talk to us about your expertise on that.
Sure. It's not as black and white of do they work, do they don't. The way I look at it is I love LinkedIn for outreach. I think it's underrated for outreach. You are limited by volume. About 39, 40 invitations can be sent to new prospective audiences, new prospective investors every day. It always amazes me how many people put investor as a job title, even vertical specific, multifamily investor. You could target by where they live and go into Sales Navigator, use different tools to put together these lists, look for a 20% or higher acceptance rate, 20% or higher response rate, warmer conversation once you're on the line. It's beautiful. And you could do it from each of the accounts of individuals on your team. I really like LinkedIn for content. Love, really like. I think you see where I'm going with this. For content. The algorithm, imagine getting 20 of your investors to comment on one of your posts and having it go across all of their algorithms and then favored to audiences that are lookalikes of people that follow them. You can really, really get more distribution using LinkedIn than other platforms, not even to mention creating a page for your business, a page around groups, a page for your email, live. There's so many different things you could create within LinkedIn for content. I will use LinkedIn ads if requested by the client. Click-through rate, cost per click, not as favorable as some of these other ad channels. It's more expensive for a lower click-through rate. I also see, more importantly, because again, I'm fine paying higher costs for leads if they're high quality. I also find the conversion behavior afterwards is different. I can make my own assessment of, hey, I'm going on LinkedIn, I'm looking to get in, get out. I kind of avoid these things. It's not the same as going into Instagram and scrolling for hours. I will say the in-mail is definitely something to look into as an ad placement. I'm more bullish on that than the newsfeed placements. But there are people who see tremendous success with LinkedIn. That's not a one size fits all, but that is my perspective towards it.
Okay, and then I did have one more question before we
Sure.
move
And
on.
one comment I can make about LinkedIn is that I haven't seen a lot of Reg D offerings on LinkedIn.
LinkedIn.
So that should automatically
Advertising.
tell you that it probably doesn't work.
Or it could tell you
Great point.
that there's not a lot of competition
It's
on,
untapped.
so you're
Yeah, I
just
don't know. I don't
talking
know.
to it.
I don't know. That's just basically untapped. I don't think so.
One more question I wanted to
But we
ask a
do get
marketer.
reg the investments there. Just the
Yeah.
outreach.
With
Again, using
outreach.
those other tools. Yeah.
Yes. And August and I totally agree with what you said there. One of the other questions I wanted to talk to a marketing guru about is you've worked with many founders before. So, you know, founders, typically they have their branding for their company, and ours at CPI Capital, as we were mentioning, we've done a lot over the last 6 years. So I'd say we have very strong branding for CPI Capital. In your perspective, what does it look like when a founder should have a personal brand showcasing their personal life? I've been asking myself this question, and I'm kind of hard on myself sometimes because I have two children. They're 1 and 2 years old. I've been every day in the back of my mind, oh my God, I got to get around to starting my personal Instagram to showcase my beautiful life that I have and whatnot like that. Will that connect with people? Do you suggest that founders showcase their personal lives? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, I've had different branding experts on my podcast. I've been at events with them, and I stay very connected to that world as a marketer beyond just an investor acquisition specialist. And I envision the founder, their brand, pulling the actual business brand and the products, the investment opportunities underneath.
Interesting. Okay.
And if that founder is positioned as a thought leader in their space, I believe it only leads to good things. You know, there could be reputation management at one point and things like that, but these are, in the word management, manageable things. I think people invest in people, and if they're able to see who's behind the brand, understand their expertise, their exits. I often hear that reference from investors that I speak to offline, whether it's at an event, we're getting in touch somehow, they respond to my podcast episodes. They reference the founders, the CEOs of the projects that they invest in, you know, even real estate projects. You think it's around the property itself by first name, and generally have things to share about them that I'm not aware of. And in many cases,
Okay.
these are my clients and I know them well. I had a client at the office yesterday. We go golfing and go to ski trips. I'm learning about them from the investors even. So
Okay.
I would say you'd want to have that level of personal brand. And there's no shortage of opportunities for CEOs, for founders to build that personal brand, whether it's appearing on podcasts and all the opportunities that exist today, conferences, and there are sponsorships around that, let alone just outreach that could get you placed, you know, write-ups. And there's so much you can do to build that personal brand and over time.
Right. Okay. That's great to know. I better get on
All right.
it.
I guess the last question before we move to the next segment of our show, I want to touch on a proprietary advantage that we worked on for a few years here at CPI to gain. And I think it's something that, if leveraged correctly, it could bring in a lot of leads for us. So when it comes to investments, Reg D investments, let's say, but similar thing in Canada, we call them exempt market type of investments. People can use their retirement accounts to invest in these type of deals. In the US, they can use a custodian like IRA Club to self-direct their retirement accounts,
401ks or IRAs.
IRAs, into an investment like ours without touching their account, without a tax event. And then when the deal is wrapped up, those funds go back to their retirement account. In Canada, is the same exact concept. People who have their investments sitting in, as we call them, RRSPs, RESPs, TFSAs, can self-direct them through a custodian such as Olympia Trust or other firms and invest in our deals. The only difference between Canada and the US is that in the US, the deal can be structured in any vehicle. It could be structured in an LLC, it could be structured in a corporation, it could be structured in a limited partnership. However, in Canada, unlike the US, people self-directing their retirement accounts into the exempt market, into Reg D, let's say, into the alternative space, the vehicle has to be a mutual fund trust, which is a very costly, cumbersome, a very difficult entity to be able to launch and manage because you need to have 150 investors at all times. There's so many different hoops you have to jump through. And we basically worked for 2 years to be able to launch a mutual fund trust to be able to accept registered funds from Canadians. And Canadians have over $2 trillion sitting in their registered funds, collecting pretty much dust, right? They're getting maybe 5%, if they're lucky, net of fees that these other Wall Street type of firms charge. But they could come and invest in a multifamily deal or a development deal and make between 15 and 25% average annualized returns, right? And get some yield as well if it's a multifamily deal. If we have that type of a competitive advantage, that we're one of the only handful of firms across Canada that offer syndicated deals, we're one of the only firms, US firms, that offer syndicated deals, exposure to syndicated multifamily and BTR deals, but allow Canadians to use their retirement account to come through our fund and not to be taxed and invest. What would be your strategy there when it comes to when a firm has a competitive advantage, which is so strong like that? What would you do?
Well, in that case, I'd want to seek out strategic partners, those who are managing those funds for those audiences to build awareness. I would make sure that that type of competitive advantage is also highlighted in the marketing. So, in the content, social media, email, long form content, in the advertising and advertising copy, on the offering page and/or landing pages. Of course, we want to test this against other messaging. I'd want to see what's physically producing a stronger response against other, value points. But I would want to make sure that's out there. And of course, given the nature of that, building strategic partners, so you can be bringing in people with those types of funds available and measuring those leads accordingly.
Got it.
And you keep it simple, right, Jason? Because I know I'm watching you before, you were talking about an elevator pitch, and you can go on for 30 minutes or 3 minutes, and you're like, no, just keep it very short and simple. And that way people can connect with it right away. So one of your strategies, I believe you said, just keep it really simple, and that brings more people through the door.
Absolutely. The simpler you're able to make it, the more absorbable it is. So if I said, hey, do these four things, do these seven things, seven's actually a pretty good number for an article, but if I'm just stating these verbally, it's going to feel like you need to be writing it down. If I say, hey, three things, content, ads, outreach, three things, people can remember three things. So if you are breaking your value prop down into three things, it's going to be far more memorable. In fact, there's a branding expert, quote and reference a lot, Ryan Follin. I think his processes are amazing. I've seen them work with founders firsthand, literally hundreds of times. He's got something called the 313 method, where you break what you do, you break your offering down into three sentences. It's then a whole exercise you go through to combine that and make that one sentence, and then to break it down into three words. But that is powerful. It gives that type of description that you'd expect from three sentences in those three words, and you could use that in advertising copy. And that's just one
Nine.
of the approaches towards it. That's what you want to be playing for, that direction with your messaging.
So how does this sound, guys? RRSP at 25%.
Or I thought about three words like we make money.
Yeah.
Like for you probably, but
You'd make money, maybe.
yeah.
You'd make money. Oh, this could get
You make
interesting.
money with us. No, that's more than three words.
I love it. So much fun. Oh my gosh, there's so many moving parts when it comes to marketing. It can make you like literally pull your hair out. But people like Jason,
Yes.
their minds think in such a quick way on it. It's just
But
that.
they've stacked on it too from
Oh my
before.
gosh,
They
they've
keep
stacked on
stacking
it
over the years to
layers.
see what worked, what didn't work, what layers can I add. It
Yes.
was
Make this video, say it like that, do it like this. Because it's so sad because you think that your way is going to work. You're like, and you put like 10 hours into creating one little video or ad, and then it's like, no, that doesn't give the right message across.
or like a newer firm, you see what others do and you think, oh my God,
That's
that
amazing.
chiropractor, he must be doing those meetups. That's why he raised hundreds of millions of dollars. Then you go do the meetups. You're like, oh,
There's like what, 50 people
we
that
didn't even get a single
came.
investor from a meetup. That it wasn't that. Then you find out, no, it was all paid ads.
We did
Anyways,
some meetups all over Canada, didn't we?
we did.
Okay, yeah, so many things, but trials and tribulations. It's better to just hire somebody like Jason, get him to show you the ropes, and then just execute from there,
Yeah.
honestly, than to do it
And
by yourself because, yeah, please.
it was gonna add, we have to think like that. We're on the front
Yes.
lines of performance. One budget in many cases has to produce the next.
Yes.
That group that's spending $100,000 a month, they were probably in that $5,000-$15,000 a month level at some point. And if it didn't work for 3 months, they probably would have cut it off. But because it did, it got up to those levels and that type of magnitude, and it's impacting this many people and this many projects at this point. So it is that attention to detail that's required for a campaign to continue. One budget produces the next.
Yeah, and the communication behind it. what you're communicating out there, which is like you think it would be so simple and clear. It's not. So this has been really great, Jason. Yeah, you're awesome. Let's move on to the next segment of our show, 10 Championship Rounds to Financial Freedom. I warned Jason before the show that we're going to be rapid firing 10 questions at him. Are you ready, Jason?
Let's do it. Looking forward to
Okay,
it.
awesome. Let's get into things. First question. Who's been the most influential person in your life?
My dad.
Right on. You can
My
elaborate.
dad, he taught me about how to start a business, how to run a business, how to deal with difficult conversations. Sales is a transfer of energy. I picked this stuff up just watching him as a young adult.
Nice. Love it. Second question is, what is the number one book you would recommend?
The E-Myth, my partner, our COO, had me read it before starting the business, and it shows the difference from being an entrepreneur and working on a business and being self-employed and being able to set up a team to effectively hit the goals. It talks about the failure rate of new businesses, different types of funds even, and creating replicatable models. I quote to it regularly.
Nice. Okay, we'll have to read that August. Perfect. Next question. If you had the opportunity to travel back in time, what advice would you give your younger self?
Let's say it's starting the business and creating more referral partnerships. You can never have enough. They're instrumental to the growth of a business. These could be with investors, by the way, and individuals who manage investors and have that regular flow. It's just a complete competitive advantage towards other groups, other opportunities in your space.
Nice. Awesome. Next question is, what's the best investment you've ever made?
Early BTC. At least I could buy
Nice.
more coins at that price.
For sure.
Oh, don't we all? Amazing. Good for you. Okay, now, what's the worst investment you've ever made and what lessons did you learn from it?
A lot of different directions I could take this question, but since I mentioned cryptocurrency was very up on Terra Luna, they created a stable coin. It wasn't backed. It took down Terra as well as the rest of the ecosystem, one exchange after the other. So I think projects that over leveraged. I could look at other, services I've bought. I could look at a few other things, but that's probably what sticks with me. Probably because it was so high and I had such a strong appreciation, and then it all fell apart.
Oh, geez.
Translated at today's prices, probably the most money I've ever lost has also been on, as they call them, shit coins.
Oh,
Yes.
okay. Okay, Jason, next question is, how much would you need in the bank to retire today? What's your number?
I want to keep being of value. I want to keep impacting the world and find ways to get involved. 100 million would be great. 35 million, I'm told, is an area where you don't have limitations. It could be done with a few million with the right structure, of course. 10 million in a whole at a whole different level. But at my age and for what I do, I think that 35 or that 100 would shut me up, if you will, where I don't have to be
I like
contributing
that answer.
anymore.
I like that
Yeah,
answer. That's
nice.
awesome.
Nice.
Reach for the stars. Good for you. Next question is, if you could have dinner with someone dead or alive, who would it be?
Ah, if I could have dinner tonight. This answer may be controversial, but at the same time, it's the first thing that comes to mind, and I think it'd be interesting to anybody. So, Elon Musk, did a lot of research on him in my early career. Obviously, he's gone through different changes, different growth, but the magnitude of the projects and everything that he's involved with, why is that a bad answer?
Yeah, aside from the founding fathers, Elon Musk is the most common answer that we get.
Ah, now I just feel
No,
average and basic. But that
no.
was my gut response.
Nice. Sorry, nice question. If you weren't doing what you're doing today, what would you be doing now?
Golf YouTuber. That would be more of a dream. I don't know if my skill level is to that point, but in terms of how I'd want to spend my days, that'd be pretty fun. It all comes down to the guests and who you're having on. So that's a fair answer. Maybe travel bloggers, probably another one there. But I love what I
Hi.
do. Businesses fail. Investment opportunities don't have awareness without marketing, without new capital coming through. So I'm excited to wake up in the morning.
I love it. Awesome. All right. My favorite question, Jason, book smarts or street smarts?
I'd probably have to say street smarts. I know people who were, top of their class in their university or high school, whatever it may be, all different types of accolades on the book smart side. I know others that outperform them in their role in the world, if you will. I don't want to just say, how well they do financially or their portfolio or anything like that, but because of their street smarts, I feel street smarts can navigate through situations in a different way.
Nice answer. Perfect. And last question. If you had $1 million in cash and you had to make one investment today, what would it be?
I feel like I should mention one of my clients, but I think there's also compliance to that. $1 million cash today really gets into a conversation of portfolio management, but I feel that's not the nature of the question. So I'm a marketer. I follow different influencers and thought leaders. I'd probably look at five of the accounts of people I know directly, but that are constantly pointing out different things to me in the market, and I would go with one of their recommendations. So
Nice.
it's, externalized a little bit. I've done this in the past, not quite at those levels, but I've done this in the past and done very well off of it. So instead of telling, one stock or one asset or one this or one that, it really does change every day. I really do want to know what people kind of see what's coming next or saying, and I would want to base it on that, as well as have a very thought out strategy for liquidity.
Nice. Great. That's about it, I guess. I guess for everybody that's listening, Jason, what's the best way that people can reach you?
So I'm accessible on LinkedIn, Jason Fishman, DNA, Marina Del Rey. Feel free to reach out to me anytime. Go to our website, www.digitalnicheagency.com. I would also encourage you to check me out on YouTube, youtube.com/@digitalnicheagency. Over 230 podcast episodes and 60 webinars and all different types of guests and topics. I look at it as a duty to share what's working, what's not in the world of investor acquisition. And there's probably a lot of steps, a lot of time, a lot of budget you could save by watching those videos. Nice.
Awesome.
Duda,
Thanks,
thank you so much
Jason.
for being here. Thanks for sharing your
Yeah,
knowledge and experience with us.
we appreciate it.
Thanks, August. Thanks, Ava. This has been great. I've been enjoying the conversation. Really appreciate you having me on.
Thank you for joining us for this episode. We hope this conversation enlightened you on how to win big in this highly profitable and risk-averse space. Get on your feet and embrace this world that offers so many opportunities just waiting for you out there. Continue your journey to becoming a savvy real estate expert by subscribing to the show at cpicapital.ca. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and share with your friends. See you on the next one.